Penguin Random House Audio presents This Is All I Got, A New Mother's Search for Home. This is the author, Lauren Sandler. To anyone who might see themselves reflected in this story. Introduction. I met Camilla in 2015 at a shelter in Brooklyn as spring was melting into summer. I would know her for much longer than a year, but this story is of the first 12 months in which she fought to build a life of basic stability for herself and the baby who was about to be born. With finishing school posture, she walked into the weekly evening meeting for shelter residents in a fresh white blouse and a pair of twill short shorts, slim but for her pregnant belly. She didn't look like she needed to be there, or that's what one of the new mothers in the room muttered to no one in particular. Camilla took a seat, surveying the room, and began to advise another pregnant resident on maternity patients' rights and natural birthing techniques. She was generous with a conspiratorial glance, maintaining just enough snap in her neck to remind the world she was Dominican, a constant portrait of double consciousness. But no matter how tall she carried herself, her feet remained anchored in a place she didn't want to be. She was born into struggle and deeply tethered there. What set her apart? Was it her charisma? Her slightly preppy style? The world couldn't see her as someone who belonged in a shelter. Let's be straight. No one belongs in a shelter. Name any cliche about faded futility. They all apply to the individual experience of managing poverty in America. But Camilla's caseworkers would tell you that they'd never seen anyone as knowledgeable about the system in which she was stranded. They marveled at how she kept policy and dates and addresses and caseworkers' names in her head like a savant, as she navigated waiting rooms and obtuse paperwork in her search for affordable housing, in her securing of public assistance, in her endeavors to establish legal paternity and procure child support, in her efforts to stay in school. Camilla held my eye contact as I explained to the group of women in the room that if they were willing, I wanted to know their stories, to witness their lives. Some of them shrugged, some of them shook their heads, some nodded, open to the invitation, if skeptical. But Camilla sat up even taller and folded her long fingers over the baby blue purse resting on her lap. I could feel a light switch on. And with it, her mind revving, her thoughts lurching forward as she composed herself. Her cheeks, pale for Dominican skin, flushed slightly like heat was building inside her. She waited politely for me to finish and for others in the room to speak. She set her jaw through the awkward silence that followed. And then, perched on the edge of her seat, her sandals firmly on the floor, Camilla spoke. She said she had a story to tell. As I came to learn, she had grown up mainly in apartments in Queens, paid for by her mother's Section 8 housing voucher, back when a single mother could count on such support. No more. Her father had never lived in any of those apartments. He had his own life, and plenty of other kids, most of them with their own single mothers. Her mom had three other children of her own, too, and each had a different father, one more absent than the next. Camilla's unfinished college years offered a succession of dorms at first, and once she got pregnant, a succession of shelters. Here she was now, weeks before giving birth, making plans to stay off welfare and finish her degree in criminal justice. From that first meeting, I sensed that she was a woman who was hell-bent on propelling herself out of this shelter, away from the circumstances of her past, towards something solid, ambitious. And as I came to experience her, within and beyond her story, one thing was clear to me. If Camilla couldn't use her wits and persistence to make the system work for her, no one could. I was at the shelter where Camilla was temporarily living because I wanted to witness and understand how deepening inequality is lived in America, and particularly in New York, a city that gets richer as the poor get poorer. This city is a funhouse mirror of national inequality, displaying class differences in their most exaggerated forms. At the shelter, I met women whose backgrounds varied, but who all had nowhere to go when they showed up with their bags, and nowhere to go when they packed them, once it was time to leave. I first moved to the city in 1992, when homelessness was considered a national crisis. The night I unpacked my bags, 23,482 people slept in the city's public shelters. By the evening I met Camilla in 2015, that number had ballooned to over 60,000 people in the city's mainstream shelters, where in total, that year, over 127,000 people spent at least a night. That year, thousands more were housed in specialized shelters for domestic violence survivors, homeless youth, or people with HIV/AIDS. And thousands more housed in hotel rooms or dilapidated apartments awaiting an eligibility determination for temporary housing assistance were denied ongoing aid. On the streets, in parks, on subway trains, over sidewalk vents, thousands more tried to find comfort on a strip of cardboard, a bag stuffed with whatever could be carried or scrounged. A crisis of far greater magnitude is growing. We see men mostly, their stench pushing passengers to the other side of the train car or sitting on the edge of the sidewalk behind a cardboard sign. That man continues to be the emblem of homelessness and has been for decades. But there's a much larger homeless population in the city, an invisible one. One carefully made up, often headed to work or school, clustered down at the other end of the subway car with everyone else, avoiding that man in a greasy parka on a summer's day. Homeless. What word more obliterates the nuances and trials of complicated relationships, of ambitions, of plans? It means failure rather than perseverance. Homelessness as an end, even at a young age. But the homelessness crisis is a single lens in the kaleidoscope of American poverty, more specifically, the catastrophe of urban American poverty, and even more specifically, the poverty of women in urban America. The story of every person who has found themselves homeless or in a place of serious housing instability is individual. And yet each story is its own keyhole view of this country's deepest flaws. The vanishing safety net, the scourge of housing inequality, the yoke of which family you're born into, the stubbornness of entrenched racism, and the burdens that women are forced to carry utterly alone. Theoretically, poverty doesn't discriminate. The data, however, tells a different story. It tells us that most people in poverty are women, specifically women of color. Furthermore, they're single mothers. And many of them are homeless, which means their kids are too. 1 in 30 children in America is homeless, a population of 2.5 million kids in total. 3/4 of the American homeless population is made up of families, mainly mothers raising kids alone. There's no doubt that it's hard being a man in poverty, but most don't do it as single parents. Among developed countries, no nation fails its single mothers as gravely as does the United States. Here, they receive paltry social income support, the fewest early childhood education and care options, minimal paid family leave and health care. More single mothers work in the United States than in other countries, but they are still impoverished by egregiously unequal low wages. Only 1/3 collect child support. No wonder single mothers make up the vast majority of our homeless population, whether we see them sleeping on the street or not. This is information that any concerned citizen can find with a quick internet search. But the data doesn't tell the whole story. We encounter so few stories about the homeless who apply lipstick, change a diaper and go to work or to class, or to the infinite linoleum-floored, fluorescent-lit waiting rooms of our failing social services system. Data can tell us who's on welfare, sure, but it doesn't tell us that a person becomes synonymous with welfare, is defined by it, a life's narrative distilled into a number, devoid of humanity, of individuality. Poverty on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis is often numbingly boring. Hours spent in waiting rooms just to learn an appointment has been canceled and having to feel time slow in the same space again the next day. Evenings after shelter curfew, alone in a room with a sleeping baby. Miles of subway tracks, followed from one remote neighborhood to another, searching for resources and information. This was a life that was familiar to Camilla long before she arrived at the shelter where I met her. It was her mother's childhood, It was her own childhood. Now it was to be her child's childhood.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?